Butterflies would dance someday.
We know it seems harmless from a distance, mocking a woman's pain on a large platform. And I'm going to warn you ahead of time. My cat, Mr. P-Funk, is what I have named him. Does not appreciate me talking into this microphone and not paying him any mind. So you're probably going to hear him on the background, and I apologize ahead of time. But in any case, mocking a woman's pain on a large platform is purposeful. And let's get into that. Because mocking a woman's pain on a large platform, it does more than insult one person. It teaches a lesson to every single woman who watches. And see, it's not with a lecture. So, you know, people don't have to go to school or attend class to learn these lessons. They don't have to watch a movie or anything like that. No need to make films for people to get the lesson. It doesn't deal with rules. So you don't have to make laws. You don't have to get your people elected and make certain rules. But it does it by demonstration. And let me break it down for you how it happens. You know, just, we're going to go step by step. Now, first, public ridicule becomes a warning sign. And a lot of you are going to remember this. It's going to sound familiar from high school. Maybe a time you wanted to forget. And when I say public ridicule, it doesn't even mean that in the, you know, high school walls. It may mean on your front porch, on the playground, in the backyard, front yard, just, you know, on the court. Now, first, public ridicule becomes a warning sign. When a woman's fear, grief, or boundary is laughed at in front of millions, or, like I said, you remember this, in front of a group of people, small group could be, other women do not need it explained to them. They read that room instantly. They see what happens to women who speak plainly about harm. The message lands fast and without mercy. Listen, if you speak, sweetie, this could be you. This could be you. Next, the platform rewrites the rules of credibility. Mockery reframes pain as overreaction. Your pain is overreaction. Your tears are drama. So the reframing of pain as overreaction, drama, and as weakness. The thing about it is it turns it around into a thinking error, as it's always painted this way, that we don't ever analyze it and say, well, wait a minute, now let's look at it here. Is this what we're seeing, or are we framing it as women are always this way? It feeds that hunger for misogyny, because misogyny is a thinking error. Now, once that frame is set, any woman who shares a similar experience, any woman who comes along, any woman who shares a similar experience must first prove a few things: that she's reasonable, stable, and likable before her safety is even considered. The good victim thing. First, I gotta prove I'm a good victim. I'm a good little girl. And so we lose some there. We lose a lot. Because many decide it's not worth the cost because, first of all, people are human beings. People are human beings. So then silence for so many becomes a rational survival choice. Women aren't quiet because they lack stories, because they have nothing to say. They're quiet because they are smart and they're calculating the consequences. Real consequences like job loss, social exile. Social exile in the church. I've seen it up close as in my days as a professional court advocate, working for nonprofits, her entire families. I mean, I'm with her, walking with her through this. I have the police reports. I have the hospital reports. I've seen the injuries on her. So you can't tell me that she created those injuries. I saw them. I saw the hospital reports. I know that the medical personnel, what they wrote in there about their concern for her, what the police told me themselves, and the whole family took his side. In front of me, the harassment being turned into a punchline. When the price of truth is humiliation, silence can feel extremely protective. You want to know why she doesn't leave? The price of truth is extremely expensive. You talking about groceries. Our society makes leaving expensive and costly. That's what we do. I don't mind. I've had folks unfollow me for saying, what do you mean we? I mean we, because we as a society don't change it. And I don't mind. Now, after that, the crowd effect multiplies the harm. Large platforms do not mock alone. Now, when you start with a large platform, let's say a news organization or something along those lines, then the comment sections are going to echo that, whether it's bots or whether it's real people. Then those clips are going to circulate, and they're going to circulate, I mean, infinitely. Then strangers are going to pile on. And what began as one person's pain becomes communal entertainment. Now, before social media became, you know, kind of a mainstay in our lives, guys used to go around, a woman would try to leave, and it's not uncommon for a woman to come to you and say, guess what he did? He posted photos of me all throughout the neighborhood that we live in, or the new neighborhood that she now lives in, and that type of, you know, the type of photos. It was, you know, that type of thing. Now they don't have to do that. Women's pain has always been for spectacle. You get it? And, you know, so let me move on. Instead of asking, and here's why I say we, because we've all got to be doing it at the same time. Instead of asking, you know, why did this happen? Why, you know, why didn't she do this? Putting all the whys on her. We got to start at the same time. At the same time, or at least the majority, saying, hey, why was this harm allowed? Putting all the whys on the harm side. And not on her, and not against her. And we got to start doing that. At least the majority have got to start doing that. Get away from, why did she say it that way? Why didn't she leave sooner? You know, why did she make that choice? Why did she do that? And put all of our whys. I don't know all the whys. That's something we could come up with together. Put those whys where the harm started in the first place and put them over there. And once we do that, once the majority of us start doing that, now we might be getting somewhere. But when we don't do that, women absorb the lesson that staying quiet is a lot safer than trying that uphill up the highest mountain on this planet towards seeking accountability. And systems remain unchanged because the people, you know, who were closest to the harm, adjacent to the harm, you muted those people. Not enough people came and stood by them, so they're muted. When pain is laughed at, it's erased from the record as something very unserious, not dangerous, not instructive, not worthy of protection. It doesn't only silence the present voices, it weakens every voice that's going to come forward in the future. Women learn that even if they survive, their truth may not survive public reaction. And here's the truth beneath it all. Silencing does not always look like censorship. Sometimes it does look like laughter. A culture that mocks women's pain, it doesn't need to ban. You don't need to have a rule that says any legislation, no congressional rule, no executive order, nothing has to say we hereby ban women from speaking. You don't have to do that. Just laugh. It makes speaking too costly. You mock. The majority of people get together, mock, ridicule. And the women that are close to harm take notice every single time. There's this thing online that folks like to say, read the room. You think women ain't reading the room? Women are reading the room. And the most vulnerable women, the most vulnerable women who cannot afford not to be fluent in reading the room, they can't afford it, are reading that room. And they say nothing. That's why I ask women to please not participate in silencing women's pain, mocking the pain, laughing at the pain, genuine pain of other women. So when you wonder why women hesitate, why they go quiet, why she stay, man, why she keep going through all that, why they tell pieces of the story and just see if they can trust you with a little bit, even with advocates, what we know is, I've been through this so many times, where they call us and they give us a little piece, just to see if they can trust you, little piece. Why do they do that? Please remember this. When women's pain, their sincere and genuine pain, becomes entertainment, silence is her strategy. It's how she protects her health, her peace, her privacy. And you may say, oh, well, you know, at least she's not, you know, but wait a minute, she's still getting beat. But this is still happening, but that's still happening. But she has less bullies to deal with. She doesn't have a few people laughing at her and doing this and running and telling, you know, this person that and that, you know. She's reduced the number of bullies. So we got to decide who we want to be. Not who we tell ourselves we are, but who we genuinely and authentically want to be. When women's pain becomes entertainment, silence becomes a strategy. Because of the choices that each of us has made. Thanks for listening. And the world we want, the world we really want, I mean like genuinely want, depends on who we all decide to be the group genuinely and authentically. That's what it comes down to. Greatness is in all of us. But we're going to have to call. We're going to have to dig. We're going to have to decide that each and every day we're going to make certain behavior choices so that we can have the world that we want daily. Not who we say we are, but who we really are. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. Be genuinely great. Genuinely great. And we'll have the world we want.
This is Tanya GJ Prince. Thanks for listening. Y'all be great.